Carroll, bringing it forward. Thompson's making the run. Carroll hangs on to it, though. Still Davy Carroll. Could go all the way here. Oh, what a goal!
Hello, I'm Phil Catchpole and welcome to another episode of Ringing the Blues. Coming up on this week's show, we have all the action and reaction from the Nottingham Forest game. We turn the clock back with Paul Lewis, Mr. Chairboy is on the net, reliving the opening game at Adams Park, a friendly also against Nottingham Forest. Plus, we chat to Wickham fan Ian Potter, who's taking on the most incredible challenge. But first, let's head to Mexico City for the results with Uri.
We are ringing the blues from Mexico City. My name is Uri, and here are the results for the Championship League. Coventry City 0, Watford 0. Barnsley versus Derby County, postponed because a waterlogged pitch. Bournemouth 3, Birmingham City 2. Bristol City 0, Cardiff City 2. Luton Town 1, Huddersfield Town 1. Middlesbrough 1, Brentford 4. Millwall 4, Sheffield Wednesday 1. Preston North End 1, Rotherham United 2, Queen's Park Rangers 1, Blackburn Rovers 0, Stoke City 0, Reading 0, Wycombe Wanderers 0, Nottingham Forest 3. Okay, so this hurts, but Cherboy Spanish this week is the truth. It is what it is. Bottom of the league. Bottom, la parte de abajo. The league, la liga. Bottom of the league, la parte de abajo de la liga. Okay, please keep the optimism up. Good times ahead. Hope for the best. Logging off from Mexico City and back to Ingerland with my amigo Phil Catchpole. Until next week.
So the two times champions of Europe, Nottingham Forest, were coming to Adams Park for the first time in the Football League. They were taking on the 28 times champions of Buckinghamshire, Wycombe Wanderers. Here's what happened.
Murray has evaded Josh Knight on his shoulder and goes for the lob, and it's a beautiful finish from Glenn Murray. The ball was lofted over Josh Knight, who clearly thought Murray was offside. He evaded the assistant's flag and nonchalantly just lobbed the ball over Ryan Allsop and into the far corner. 6 minutes gone at Adams Park. Wycombe 0, Forest 1. Forest send it forward. Brought down well by Glenn Murray in between the two defenders, and it's a Forest penalty. Grimmer and Knight tussling with Murray, who went down inside the area, and Forest with a chance to double their advantage at the start of the second half. The right foot of Glenn Murray against the gloves of Ryan Allsop early in the second half. It's Murray right-footed, and Allsop, despite getting a hand, doesn't prevent it hitting the back of the net. But it's Wycombe Wanderers 0, Nottingham Forest 2.
Lolly versus Grimmer. Goes on the outside, cuts it back low. Knockouts there and hammers it into the top corner for Forest 3. Up at Wycombe now, and that was a beautifully worked goal. Real championship quality from Nottingham Forest, and fantastic quality in the finish. Wycombe 0, Forest 3.
Gareth, another tough day at the office, but this time at Adams Park.
Yeah, you know, 3-0 looks worse than it was. I thought we were the better team in the first half, if I'm being honest. I thought at half time again, coming confident that we would go out and do the same thing against them. Obviously, the penalty, the referee gives that penalty. It's a real soft penalty. Changes the game. But I'm disappointed, you know, first half. We made more mistakes than Notts Forest. That's the key to the game today. You know, we didn't. We gave him a couple of goals. The third goal's, you know, a fantastic finish by Knockout, and you've got to give him credit for that. But the first two goals are our mistakes, totally our mistakes, and we've got to be better than that. We've got to eradicate those mistakes, because at this level, I keep saying, you get punished. We had a game plan. We put the game plan in place. But obviously, we've got to do better when these crucial moments are, you know. And so I'm gutted. Yeah, I'm gutted for the boys. We're not going to get anything from the officials. We know that. We've worked that out now after half the season, and we can't let that affect us in our heads, you know. And that's my job, to make these boys mentally tougher and mentally ready to bounce back when things go against us. But yeah, gutted, because they're a great bunch. But again, we've got a big, big month now. We've got a, by the end of February, I'm sure we're going to know where we're going to be, and our destiny's still in our own hands. But wow, we've got to start winning some games, and that's going to start on Tuesday.
Mistakes have been the sort of the narrative throughout the season defensively for Wycombe Wanderers. And what can you say differently at this stage of the season to change things up?
Yeah, do you know what? I can't say a great deal. You know, we work hard, but some teams have got some fantastic players. I mean, look at Notts Forest's squad. Nottingham Forest, they're an unbelievable side. They've got an unbelievable squad. For them to be where they are is incredible. But we're competing with them. And I thought first half, at half time, my message was keep going, because although we've made a silly mistake for their first goal, you know, we don't play offsides. We know that. We don't do that. So that was a silly mistake. We can recover from it. We can bounce back from this, because the rest of the first half, there was only one team looking like they were going to score, and that was us. But, you know, the penalty changes everything. It gives them a two-goal lead. It gives them the impetus to go and play more expansive football, and that kills us. So, you know, it's something I've got to look at. Tuesday's coming quick. I'm sure there's going to be rotation in the squad again. The schedule is mental, but every player I've got is capable, and I'm going to make sure that we put a strong performance in against Sheffield Wednesday. We need to. They've been beat today. We need to go up there and put in a strong, strong performance, because, you know, I was disappointed. Mistakes have cost us today.
You always find a positive. What was the one you found today?
Yeah, the positive is that first half performance. You know, when you're talking about a team with Knockhart in it, and you know, so, I mean, just some of the players. Krivanovic, great player. You know, Glenn Murray. You know, the Figueroa, Bong. You know, some Christie, some great players, and we've more than matched them. You know, we've got crosses in, we've got chances. We didn't work their keeper enough. We huffed and puffed. It's just that final bit of quality and eradicating the mistakes at the back. I know what the problem is, but I've said it game after game, you know. The positives are that we are in the championship. We are competing with these teams. We need a run of games now. We need a run of wins, and we do that. We do go on wins, but we need a run now to get anywhere near this pack. And by the end of February, I'm pretty sure we're going to know if there's a chance of staying up. I still believe. I know the boys still believe. It's just putting that belief now into performances.
The morale must be tough, though, with the gap now, that it getting cut off at the bottom of the table. I know you've set a points target to stay up, but when the table is like it is it difficult to keep the morale up?
Yeah, of course it is, you know, but not morale. It's my job to get in there and make everyone positive on Monday morning. Listen, I am not going to dress this up. We have the lowest budget by an absolute mile in this league. You know, we are planning long term. We are planning for, you know, 2-3 years time, not just this season. And that's real positive. That's brilliant from Rob and Pete. You know, they are real long term lookers, and I'm loving that. But we've got to give it a go. You know, we've got a fantastic opportunity here to play in this championship, to get points in this championship. And again, I firmly believe we can do it, but we might need a little bit of luck. We definitely need some performances, and we've got to stop making silly mistakes. End of.
So Nottingham Forest are heading for the sunlit uplands of mid-table following their 3-0 win at Adams Park. Here's what the Forest fans had to say. Eric.
Good win. Granted, it was Wickham, and we have more money and a bigger, better squad than they do, so we should be expected to win. But it was a good result, and it's great to see us scoring goals again.
Dane B.
That third goal was as good as it gets football-wise. It shows we have the players who can play football when allowed to.
Legs akimbo.
100 times better than that diabolical first half. Great to be able to say, well done, Forrest. It's been a while.
corn cob guy.
It's only Wickham, who are undoubtedly the worst side in the division. But still, a welcome 3 points. Our ability to pick up wins against the bottom six may well be an important factor if we stay up.
ER.
First half, I was worried that even Wickham looked a better side than us. Good goal from Murray. But the rest of it was putrid.
Tom Smith.
We took the game to them second half and we battered them. Hopefully, Houghton will be given food for thought there. Good win, good performance, but only Wickham.
Strummer.
Wickham's manager looks and dresses like Susie Quattro.
So, as the Lokes Park era ended, after more than 5,000 games, 8 Isthmian League titles, 2 Amateur Cup final appearances, and 23 Barks and Bucks Cup triumphs, the Adams Park years are about to unfold. Appropriately, the new ground was named after the man whose foresight had secured the Wanderers' future way back in 1947. Over £3.5 million has been spent building a stadium up to Football League requirements. A stand with seats for 1,200, luxury bars, a conference and banqueting suite, even a gymnasium. And who better to help celebrate the new stadium's opening on August the 9th, 1990, than Brian Clough, the most charismatic manager in football, who brought his First Division stars to town.
That's right, Nottingham Forest, our last opponents in the league at Adams Park, actually opened the stadium back in 1990 with a friendly. And who better to talk to about these wonderful memories than Paul Lewis, Chairboys on the Net, the original gas room. If you want to know something about Wickham, then he'll know it. Paul, great to speak to you. What were your memories of that day?
Well, it was a typical pre-season friendly, if you like, but it was a Thursday night. It's quite a warm night, so it was strange in as much that, as a new ground, it's a bit like going to a new home, I suppose. Like a new build, and everyone turns up wandering down the road, thinking, "Well, what's it going to be like? Where are we going to go?" Because you have to remember then that it was a brand new ground, and the club had introduced segregation as well. For the people who've been going in recent times, just to give you a picture of the ground, it was 3 sides were standing. So the Woodland Stand was just a terrace. The Valley End was exactly as it was now, and the Away End was a mirror image of the Valley End. So the capacity was 6,000. So you turned out, you weren't quite sure where to go. So it was strange. But from a perspective of the fans walking down the road, and it was a little bit chaotic with parking. So not a lot's changed over the years, but then you could park anywhere then. There was no restrictions. People were parking in back of factories and all sorts. And I think the attendance was about 5,000-ish, which was a very good crowd at the time.
You say it's a bit like a new build home. I mean, it was only 3 months from the closing game at Lokes Park. I mean, Lokes Park, very much an old school home. The differences between the two stadiums were massive, weren't they?
They were massive, but I suppose you could say the layout was very similar. So we had 3 sides of standing and a small main stand with the capacity of the seating area, what we call now the old main stand, which then was the main stand, 1,200 seats, was almost identical seating capacity as Lokes Park. So it was sort of a similar layout, but all very new, and it all smelt new and looked new. You wasn't quite sure where to go, where the tea bars were, where the toilets were, where you were meant to go. I do remember going down there, and everyone think, where do we go for a drink before the game? And it's the middle of nowhere compared to Lokes Park. Do we go to the pub beforehand, or is there a pub at the ground, a bar at the ground? And I think the club were caught out at the time. Where we would go now for a drink, what was to become the Via Suite, wasn't even open on that day. I mean, all they had open was what was called the centre spot, for which was going to be the pub where the fans had a drink before the game. The Veer Suite wasn't even open, so they got caught out quite quickly, and it took two or three games before they realised we better open this up, because there's a bit of a boom in popularity for Wycombe Wanderers, you know, at the new ground. It sort of sparked a bit of interest on the back of Wycombe been in the press, but there's a bit of bounce from Italia 90 as well.
I was going to say 1990, a fantastic year for football. England showing at the World Cup was fantastic. And some of those players travelled to Adams Park that day and even made it onto the pitch as well. It was a very strong Forest side that Wycombe took on that day.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was strange because Forest, you'd expect to be like similar to friends we've played in recent times against Premier League clubs, where they come down and swap the teams around and make dozen substitutes at half time. But Brian Clough, he put out a strong side. I think Stuart Pearce was perhaps the only recognised name that wasn't playing. I think he was perhaps injured. And yeah, I think Franz Carr played. I think he scored the goal. And there's Des Walker, I think Nigel Clough. But on the other hand, Martin O'Neill, I think he made a dozen substitutions in second half, so he's like slightly disrespectful to his old boss.
Yeah, I see that Mark West scored the first ever goal in the stadium on 8 minutes, which I think incredibly fitting for a boy who was he's Wycombe through and through and still is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he obviously made his name at Lokes Park, coming in off the back of playing for High Wycombe Schools. And again, looking back on some notes, Dave Carroll corner, I believe, as well, to get that goal.
And I saw the goalkeeper in the second half was Chuck Musadic. Was that his first ever appearance?
I'm not sure. I think he may have played on trial briefly the previous season. But I think another big name in the Wycombe side coming on the sub, as you may have seen in the notes, was Keith Ryan. He was a complete unknown, because his cousin had played, Steve Whitby, and Martin O'Neill brought on Keith Ryan in the second half. And to think that the impact that Keith Ryan had on Wycombe over the following 10, 15 years is incredible to think that that was his first game at Adams Park.
I didn't realise that had happened on that day as well. One of the names I did see on the team sheet, which was remarkable for me, was Peter Rhodes Brown, who is the Radio Oxford sort of commentator these days. And he started that game for Wycombe Wanderers.
Yeah, he was another trialist from Oxford United at the time. I think a former Oxford United player. I'm trying to think who else played in that game. There was just looking at the team sheet. You've got Matt Crossley. I mean, O'Neill was only been in charge since the previous February, and had picked up a lot of names from Jim Kelman. So he was still gelling the side together. You know, we didn't know what was ahead. You know, Wycombe fans at the time, I mean, it was just a very new experience going to a new ground. It was strange leaving a ground that you'd been to every other Saturday for since you started supporting the club, and to go to a new ground, it's just a trip into the unknown. You know, and thinking back on, I'm just looking back now, it's 30 years ago, which is absolutely incredible. Now, I've been going to see Wycombe at Adams Park now twice as long as I saw Wycombe at Lokes Park.
Now, football fans do like to moan about stuff. Was there sort of a kind of movement of resentment about having to leave Lokes Park, even though it was going to this shiny new home at the end of an industrial estate?
There was definitely mixed reactions, you know, from the extremes of I'm never going to Adams Park to, we need to move on because of the ground regulations that had come in on the back of Hillsborough. You know, Hillsborough was 89, April 89. So that was fresh in people's minds. You know, grounds were needed to be built to a certain standard. And Lokes Park was in need of those safety regulations. We could possibly have stayed. I mean, there was a statement from the club at the time, you know, if we need to do the work at Lokes Park to get in the Football League, which was then, you know, Football League, my God, what's that all about? We would do it, but it would, you know, how that would be funded was another matter. So the move to Adams Park was come on the back of selling Lokes Park, the site, to a development company, which then got split up to the hospital as well. And it was a long, drawn-out process. I mean, the original planning application for Adams Park goes back to 1986. So it took 4 years of to and throwing with planning applications. It went to the Department of the Environment to push it through. So it was never actually passed by the local council. And thinking back to when that original application went in, the average crowd at Wickham was about 800. Mm. And it just, you know, that the progress the club made from the time that the application was made to when they moved to Adams Park, the gates had doubled, even though that, you know, the doubling of the gates had shifted up to sort of 1800, 1900 the time we moved to Adams Park. And we thought, man, this is fantastic. We're getting crowds of 2000 now. You know, we finally made it.
The club was certainly starting to move in off the pitch with the stadium, and then obviously Martin O'Neill as well. Martin O'Neill was interviewed after the game, and here's what he had to say about the stadium.
Lokes Park was very, very famous, like Yeovil's ground, and had this slope, and it was nice to be manager of the side that last played there and got to admit. But this is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, and this will be in a tradition all of its own in the next 20 or 30 years. I think the setup was, it couldn't be better. We're ready to take off. I'm getting reports through every single week about people who have come down here and had a look at the stadium, saying it's better than most second division grounds. This we accept. We've got everything here. We need a football team in the great tradition of Wigan Wanderers. I would like to continue that on. I would like us to try and get into the Football League, and it's not to become one of the great amateur sides before, but a terrific professional team.
So there was Martin O'Neill saying about he'd love Wigan to become a tremendous Football League club. 30 years and 5 months later, Nottingham Forest are visiting in the same league for the first time. I mean, that's how far Wickham have come. I think it's worth mentioning, isn't it? A lot of disappointment around the result yesterday for Wickham fans, but what a journey the club have been on since moving to Adams Park.
It is extraordinary. You know, my greatest ambition for Wickham Wanderers at the time was seeing them at Wembley. I mean, I didn't really have that much ambition of seeing Wickham Wanderers in the Football League, because I couldn't actually imagine Wickham Wanderers in the Football League. Not as I didn't want to be in the Football League. I just had this frustration of not seeing Wickham Wanderers at Wembley when other teams had been there. And many times I'd been to the FA Trophy final and seen some absolutely dire contests and in front of gates of 10,000. People at Wembley, and it was so soul destroying, and I just desperately wanted to see Wickham Wanderers at Wembley. And so the first step to that was later that first season when we got to Wembley from, you know, that great day at Altrincham in April 91, when we beat Altrincham in the second leg, and to get to Wembley for the first time was such a pivotal moment for the club, because it kicked on not just the finances of the club, but the support as well. You know, suddenly the gates started shifting from that point onwards. You know, we were still just averaging two and a bit thousand on that first season, but getting to Wembley in 91 was just a fantastic moment. And then to actually win at Wembley, I can imagine there's so many people listening would have that down as their first ever Wickham game.
Mm. I remember being there that day. Keith Scott, Mark West, the diving header. I mean, yeah, I remember it as if it was yesterday, but all kind of made possible by the move to Adams Park. Now, Paul, I know you're a music fan as well. I've just researched what the number one record was when Wickham played their first game. Have you got any guesses to what that would be?
First game at
Adams Park. So that Thursday, the 9th of August, 1990. What was number one?
Oh, I can't imagine, but it was. That year was a time when, like, the Stone Roses and Happy Mondays were. It was all that sort of Manchester scene, but I can't imagine that being up in the charts at number one. But yeah, go on then.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's nothing anywhere near as decent as that. It's Partners in Crime with Turtle Power. 4 weeks they were at number one, so not the best musical backdrop to this momentous occasion in Wickham's history. But yeah, I think it's probably better you didn't know that, to be honest.
If I did, I wouldn't have mentioned it.
Well, Paul, it's been lovely to go through these memories with you. I mean, Twitter, I think, is made for you. You've kind of transferred all the knowledge from your website, and you're fantastic to follow on Twitter. So let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter.
It's at GasmanCOTN, or you can just search. It's a link from chairboys.co.uk. There's a link in there somewhere. So, yeah, we'll keep things ticking over. There's always an anniversary of something that we can put up there, good or bad.
Well, that's the great thing. When the results at the moment, we're struggling on the pitch, which is not surprising to a lot of people because of the opposition. But every now and again, like, I see a little video pop up on your Twitter feed of something that I was at when I was a kid or something. And all of a sudden, it just sort of takes you back. And again, reminds everyone just how far this club has come in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, there's more memories on the way, that's for sure. I mean, you just look back on the last two or three seasons, four seasons, you know, we'll be looking back on that in 10 years' time, I'm sure.
And I suppose one last question and a tough one. What would be your sort of best memory of Adams Park over these last 30-odd years?
Yeah, I think the best memories, I would say, were the promotions. When we've sealed promotions to within the football league, and then going back, the times where we won promotion to the football league, where we were literally just turning up every other day, it seemed, and celebrating something or other. I mean, the end of that season where we played Runcorn, Altrincham, Slough, and all sorts. It was just an incredible time, and just, you know, you took them for granted at the time. You know, you'd turn up, Wickham would win a game, perhaps lose a game. It didn't really matter. Invade the pitch at the end. There was some sort of celebration in the old main stand, and then you went home or went down the pub and had a drink. You know, it was incredible.
I think, yeah, Steve Guppy against Runcorn, I think, is possibly my defining moment of that era. And I think one of my favourite ever Adams Park's moments. And also the playoff semi-final against Plymouth, the second leg. I think there was a real spirit of that conference celebration that night as well, which was great.
That was another great night. I think over time you just get a bit more nervous with, you know, you think, because you've experienced such great days at Wembley, you just desperately want to get back there again and experience the same thing. So, you know, that was quite a big gap from playing at Wembley to going back again in 2015. And it was a nerve-wracking experience. And at the final whistle, it's just such a massive relief when you actually get there.
Well, if you've got your own favourite Adams Park experience, find me on Twitter, at BluntPhil, and let me know. Maybe we'll revisit some of those on some future podcasts. But Paul, great to speak to you, and keep the faith, and come on, you Blues. Big game at Hillsborough on Tuesday.
Absolutely. We'll be listening in and watching.
It's often said that football fans can be a little bit crazy sometimes and do silly things. Well, last year I ran London Marathon, which I thought was pretty crazy. I managed to drag myself around and the training was pretty gruesome. But our next guest, Ian Potter, is doing something even more incredible. In fact, it makes running a marathon look a bit like popping out to the shop for a pint of milk. I caught up with Ian to find out more, and I started off by asking him to explain just what he's doing.
Well, this crazy challenge I'm taking on is it's just an 850-mile jog, so not too far. I plan on running from Land's End to John O'Groats, and hopefully I'm planning to do this in just 3 weeks. So, yeah, I'm training to be running about 40, 50 miles a day at the moment, so... It's quite full on, but, you know, fingers crossed I can do it.
That is an incredible thing to do. I mean, if you asked me to do it over 3 years, I think I would say that's going to be tight. 3 weeks?
Yeah, just the 3 weeks. My wife doesn't want me being away for any longer than that, so it's going to put the pressure on for me to do it as quick as possible.
And how long have you been training for this?
Well, I started during the first lockdown, so it's going on nearly a year now since I started training. You know, a couple of 5K jogs a week to start off with, then a couple of 10K jogs a week. And now I'm doing about 3 or 4 marathons a week just to kind of get myself in a tip-top shape for this ridiculous challenge I'm taking on. Yeah.
And were you a runner before you started this, or is this something you've sort of bought some trainers and thought, right, let's see how we get on, and then have just turned into Forrest Gump?
Yeah. Well, I've always been a runner, but like I say, nothing crazy, just like a couple of half an hour jogs from time to time. Like I said, I'm a personal trainer anyways by trades, and usually I'm training other people, but to train myself to run this huge distance it's been quite full on. And like I say, this last year has gone quite quickly, actually. So, you know, we'll see how we get on. You know, I'm in a weird way, I'm kind of really looking forward to taking it on.
I bet. And the start to this has been delayed by COVID as well, hasn't it? So has that impacted your training at all?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually meant to be starting just a couple of weeks' time. So the new start date is now the 21st of March. So I've given myself an extra couple of weeks of training. I mean, my very last run I've planned to do is actually from the Kasam to Adams Park. So I thought it'd be quite a nice way to wrap up my training before having a couple of weeks off before I set off. So, yeah, so I've got about 6 weeks to go now. Fingers crossed the lockdown gets lifted and I'm allowed to do it. Otherwise, I'll just set off as soon as Boris gives me the go-ahead.
There we are. So you could do some warm-up stretches on the fence at the Kasam before you set off on your last run.
Yeah, well, I won't stay there too long. I'll try and get away from it as quick as possible. But I thought it'd be quite a nice way to wrap up the training. So that's the plan. I'm going to get myself over to the Kasam and then run straight to Adams Park as quick as possible. It's about 23, 24 miles, and that'll be my final run of training before I set off.
Now, this crazy challenge that you're doing, this is for a really good cause. Explain what you're raising money for.
Yes, yeah, so it's this fantastic charity that we can know very well, Mind. During the first lockdown, a good friend of mine, a client I used to train, actually sadly passed away. She took her life. And I thought I wanted to do something quite big in memory of her as well. So, you know, it hit me quite hard, it did. So I thought, you know, I didn't just want to do like a small jog or, you know, like a marathon. I thought I want to do something crazy, you know, really try and raise as much money as possible. I'm trying to raise £5,000 for Minds. I've currently just passed the £3,000 marker. So I haven't even set off on the challenge yet, and I'm well over halfway hitting my target. So things are looking very good at that so far.
Well, it's a fantastic cause. Where can people find your sponsor link?
Yeah, so you can, if you go into Just Giving website, you can type in my name, Ian Potter, and my run will pop up and you'll see it on there. There's a link to donate as well. Also, I'm on Twitter. So if you follow me at Potter_runs, that will bring up a page, and all my training, all the runs I've been currently doing over the last couple of months are all on there. So people can follow me along, and then there'll be a GPS set up to my Strava account if people have the app. So they'll be able to follow me as I take on this run every day.
You know, one of the big fallouts of COVID, you know, it's put mental health under the spotlight again, and people are saying it's going to cause a mental health pandemic possibly in the coming years. Exercise, though, is a fantastic way to combat it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, even if it's just like a small little walk, you know, just getting out for a bit of fresh air, you know, 15, 20 minutes every day does the world of good. I mean, you know, being stuck indoors, looking at the same four walls 24/7 would, you know, will affect anyone's mental health. And, you know, sadly, it affected my good friend who's no longer with us. So, you know, I think it's important now more than ever to talk about mental health, you know, and I thought, you know, by doing this challenge, if it just gets people into fitness, just, you know, people who aren't into exercise at all, you know, just seeing the challenge I'm taking on and just thinking, you know, I'll just get up for a 5-minute walk this morning and I weren't planning to do that. You know, that's also a great thing about this, is get people are following me are saying that, you know, can we join you for a couple of miles of your run? You know, I don't even know these people, and they think we're not runners, but do you mind if we tag along for a couple of miles? You know, so it's clearly hitting home with a few people, which is great.
Will you be wearing the Wickham colours on your run?
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to get quite a few T-shirts. I'm going to be sweating quite a bit. You know, I've got a few shirts. I've got a few Mind T-shirts as well I'll be wearing. So I've a good friend of mine who runs the Mayo Blues fan page. I've got a couple of the flags with the Wickham badge and that I'll be taking with me. So it'll be nice to hold a shirt at the start and finish.
Well, this is an incredible challenge you're telling us about here. So you're setting off hopefully in 6 weeks, so fingers crossed. And we can follow you on Twitter across those 3 weeks to keep a track.
Yeah, that's the plan. I'll have a GPS setup as well. Every day I'll be posting the distance I've covered on my Just Giving page and on the Twitter page. So if people want to follow along as I'm running, feel free to. As many good wishes as well would be great. Just to motivate me as I'm going along would be good as well.
On the route from the length and breadth of the country, are you going to be going past any football stadiums?
So hopefully as many as possible. I mean, like I said, I've got a good friend of mine, Sam Trafford, who's currently organising the route for me, trying to make sure I stay on track. So he's been emailing football stadiums, rugby stadiums, etc., just to give me a bit of a shout out as I go across. So that's something I'm quite looking forward to as well, actually, just a bit of extra motivation as I go.
And I mean, I love my music. And when I train for the marathon, I listen to all sorts of different stuff. I mean, you're going to have a lot of time to fill here. And do you run with headphones or do you just run with your own thoughts?
Surprisingly, I don't listen to any music at all, because where I'm running on the roads all the time, I need to be able to hear the traffic come whizzing by. So that's one thing I still haven't got used to yet. I mean, I love listening to music, but, you know, just to make sure I don't get knocked over by any cars on the way, I've got to make sure I've got my ears open ready.
Wow, so just remind us then of your Just Giving link, and then we'll wish you all the very best.
Yeah, brilliant. Just go on the Just Giving page. If you put my name in, which is Ian Potter, it will show my run-up straight away. Or you can go on my Twitter page, which is @Potter_runs as well, which will show all my training. And as I say, I'll be posting a link for how far I've run every single day as I'm going, if people want to follow along as well.
Well, we'll check back in with you, hopefully. Maybe we'll even have a chat with you whilst you're doing it. And definitely at the end, the finish line as well, we'll have a chat. All the best. Good luck with the training. And, yeah, don't spend too long at the Kassam. And we wish you very well.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on, mate. Cheers.
Right, that's your lot for this week. Many thanks to Paul Lewis, Ian Potter and you for listening in. We'll be back soon, hopefully with news of some Wickham goals and maybe some more championship points. Keep the faith. And come on, you Blues.